I'm going to have to, now with this new camera, I'm going to have to adjust my setting a little bit here. It's got the fisheye, you know, so it's like there's like, you know, crap down here and crap over there, yeah. All stuff that like you didn't used to be able to see. Now you can. So, yeah. Technology, man.
Fun stuff to play with.
Yeah. Have you seen those guys that have like the whole studios where they just have like chairs and it's all like set up with the backdrop and
oh yeah no so one of the Distance Highlights interviews that I did last summer with Taylor Schroll, like he's got like the full-on cave setup.
He does, yeah,
with, like you can see the sound dampening and stuff behind him, and it was legit.
Yeah, that's what I want for us eventually. Like I would love for the YouTube stuff to do well enough that we could pay for like two chairs and a wall, you know, and then we could just like paint the wall and put some pictures up and then have the two chairs and the microphones and stuff.
I like it.
Or we could just like Hollywood it and, you know, build the exact same model at your house and then in mine, and then nobody would ever know that we weren't in the same room.
Man, so that's going to require us doing well enough that I like own a place.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. That's fair.
Or my apartment complex is probably not likely to be on board with that move.
Yeah. Or it could be like one of those, you know, when you took the shoe boxes and you like built the like model house inside of it. And what are those called?
Those dioramas.
There you go. We could just like build a diorama that we could just take in and out of your apartment. And
Yeah. All sounds great. It all sounds great.
All right. Let's hit an intro and jump into it. Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation. All right. So I presume that all of the new and interesting things that you've tried are probably the exact same things that I've tried. So I was just going to let you lead.
Yeah, that's likely accurate.
Yeah, just let you lead with that. And then I was just going to tag on for the most part.
Perfect. So, you know, this past weekend we got together, did a Mario Kart tourney.
Which I think went pretty well. Like I had a good time.
It did. Although I did make sure that I grabbed my Nintendo Switch and started practicing a little bit more just in case there's a rematch again, because I didn't do terribly, but I wasn't pleased either, you know. I'm a lot more competitive than I like to admit.
Yeah.
I'm very competitive about how uncompetitive I am. So,
well, see, and I didn't realize, so, like, Kristen's got a game that I didn't even know about, because we always play teams. We're always on the same team. And so, like, she had tricks I did not know that she had, so I was rather upset that she knew all of these ways of playing this game that I didn't
and she's
know.
Been holding out on me.
That's some crap, man. But anyway, not that I'm...
Our relationship is supposed to be built on trust, and here you are keeping Mario Kart secrets from me?
But anyway, yes.
I'm not sure if we can recover.
So we had a Mario party.
But yeah, and had the... You cooked up some really good green chili.
Oh yeah, it turned out.
And so with that, I brought over a couple of different beers. One was the Grand Canyon Amber, and had that with the green chili, and I really liked it. I felt like it had that nice kind of malty sweetness that really paired nice with, you know, the chili wasn't like, it's not here to hurt you spicy.
Yeah, it wasn't spicy
or anything like
all,
that.
Yeah,
no, not at all. Like it was very flavorful, but not like a whole lot of heat.
Yeah,
and so like the malts and everything went really nice with that, I thought.
Yeah.
And then like the other one was the double white from Marble Brewing out in New Mexico. Which is, I mean, it's a Belgian wit that they can't call a Belgian wit because they're not technically using
following the model, the same stuff.
But like it's their take on it. And I don't know, to me, that one, it wasn't bad by any stretch, but I felt like they kind of over-spiced it. Like the,
oh, really?
The spice notes on it. It kind of blocked out a lot of the sort of lighter kind of fruit notes that are sometimes in those wits.
Okay. Yeah.
Like I wasn't picking that up like at all with it. And I was just kind of getting hit by, I don't know if it was like cardamom or like allspice. I don't know what spices mm-hmm. they used, but like, it was definitely spice notes were more upfront than I'd have probably liked.
Yeah. I thought it went
good.
The dessert, so I thought forward. It was okay.
Yeah. You know, no, like it's all right with an apple crumble and some vanilla ice cream. Although to be fair, for me, most things will work pretty well with an apple crumble and some vanilla ice cream.
Yeah. There's not
like, I'm not going to be mad about almost anything else that's happening at that point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The, if it would have had the like coriander or whatever the Belgian, mm-hmm. the original style had, I don't know that would have gone, it would have gone probably okay with the chili, but it wouldn't have been as good with the dessert. So I think it kind of worked out that we had the amber with the chili, because you're right, that malty sweetness balanced it out, because it was super heavy. It was kind of greasy and fatty, kind of like when we were talking about having the sweet beers with German sausage and potatoes and things like that. It worked similarly to where the fatty pork and the, you know, potatoes and stuff that was all in it kind of went well with that that amber sweetness. So, but I thought it worked out. I thought it was, they were both good. There's a few more in my refrigerator, and I'm not mad that they're in there, you know, like I have had some, I've had some where they left them and I'm like, oh, I really wish they would have taken these, but no, you know, like they'll be well taken care of for sure. I think so. I think those
good.
Were
I'm glad they found a good home.
I think those were good choices. So yeah. All right. So I'm kind of excited to get into the topic, because again, this is, you know, me processing different things that I come across. And so in reading this book, it is making me come across all kinds of different things that I wouldn't normally come across. And that's kind of the whole point of reading, right? Like learning and experiencing different things. So this was interesting. So one of the credits that I want to give to this book is that, so we're talking more probably on the lines of the persecution side. So like whenever anybody talks about witchcraft, everybody thinks about, you know, the witch trials and burning witches and, you know, like all of that stuff. And even though that did happen, you know, and there was quite a few people hurt, the numbers aren't as bad as everybody, like they think, like it's in our brain that like everybody was just burning everybody. Like you were just walking down the street and there was witches burning on the corner, you know, like there were a lot of people, but it, you know, they'll drop the number. It'll be like, it was like 50,000 people or something like that. It might've been more, but they're like, that is a lot of people, but this was spanned over 500 years. Right. And so like when you put it in the context, they're like, yes, it was bad. Nobody's taking away from it, but it wasn't as crazy as like the movies and pop culture would make you think that these witch trials were like.
Sure.
You know,
like they weren't, it wasn't like an every other day we've got to burn somebody new for something. It was after prolonged periods of something going on or some widespread thing happening. Mm-hmm.
It was real, like, but it just wasn't an every single day occurrence. And so the thing that is interesting about it is the persecution side, right? Because we don't experience, well, like here in America, let's say, because I know what happens elsewhere, but here in America, we don't experience a lot of persecution in like the real witch burning kind of way. You know, like there are parts in the world where like, if you believe the wrong thing, yes, they do awful, terrible things to you and your family and all kinds of things. And we pray for them and hope that would stop at some point. But
yeah, to kind of what you're saying, I think in America, if anything, we're looking at more things like oppression, where there are mm-hmm. like pressures and things being put on people for things.
Right.
But full on persecution, where like you're going to be arrested, tortured, or put to death. Like systematically widespread. Right. This is how we're approaching everyone who thinks this way. It's a word that we tend to throw around a lot more often than we use accurately.
Right. I think that's exactly right. And so to this book's credit, that I think I've said before is that they don't like discount the religious or the spiritual aspect, you know, like a lot of, you know, humanism or materialists or whatever, they'd be like, oh, you know, this was just widespread psychosis. Or like, I've heard one person try to explain that Salem, they didn't know that like the potato flour was poisonous. And so they were like all eating the potato flour. And that's the reason why they were seeing these specters flying in the night, is because they were all hallucinating off this. And I was like, it takes a lot more faith to believe that than any other theory that I've heard, you know, like,
yeah,
but they're trying to justify it through a materialistic meme. You know, they're like, oh, surely these people can't be this silly. So they had to have obviously ingested some sort of psychotic drug to do this, right? So,
yeah, no. And like the idea that they were just accidentally over the course of, like you said, 500 years, people were just accidentally getting exactly the right level of high off of these, you know, like narcotic flowers to see those things, but not like die from it or like snap and go on.
Yeah, you would learn and
outright
stop. Yeah.
Psychotic rages.
Right.
Like,
so, you know, so I do give some credit to this book that they aren't just, you know, like downplaying the spiritual reality that the people, the players were participating in. But one of the things that I really liked about it is that they kind of built this picture around persecution or this justification for it. And it was around kind of a like a mental health perspective. Okay. And so I liked some of their definitions. So I'm going to drop. I know that's obnoxious when I do these things like reading, but I liked how they defined it. So like mental health was people's confident reliance on the knowledge and experience of the real world, which they are certain they possess. Okay. So like mental health in this definition was, the phrase that I use is confidence comes from consistency. So like you can step outside and know the sun is going to rise and you know it's going to go down and you know that in June the rain is going to come and then your crops are going to grow. And you know, like you, there's this rhythm to the world that is consistent and you're confident in that and that, and you get your kind of mental health from the consistency of your life.
Yeah. And I think, so as I was reading the definition, like that was one of the main things that came from it. But the other part of it to me too, that I think is kind of there is again, that idea that there's a certain level of confidence in the why. Like I might not know exactly what the why is, in the same way that like, I'm not confident I could explain how the electron firing from my brain gets my heart pulsing the way it's supposed to.
Sure.
Without me thinking about it, but I'm confident that it's all happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I'm confident that there is an actual reason behind these things and that it's possible to, I can count on those that are reliable.
Right.
So again, that consistency thing.
Reliability is a good word. I like that word because it makes me think. So I'm thinking then kind of, I'm reaching into this book and kind of pulling it into our modern day, and anxiety is one of the like biggest things that everybody's dealing with nowadays. Like anxiety is a huge mental health. You have mental health month and all these crazy things. And I think that word reliability, like there, people don't feel like they can trust or they can rely on their neighbor, their community, their people around them. There's, you know, like I was kind of thinking about, you know, the Cold War or nowadays we have the lockdown drills, you know? And so basically if you think about it, these kids are kind of being trained because they never know if a shooter is going to walk in and start blasting away at a school. So you're kind of training, like in the Cold War, they did the drills where you like got on, the bell would ring and you'd get under your desk, you know, like all of those different things.
Right. Because the wooden desk was going to protect you from the nuclear fallout.
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah. Oh no,
but it's a thing they did. And so like just the anxiety that comes from it, a lack of certainty or reliability of the people around them and their like, it makes sense why anxiety is so high is because reliability is so low.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, that's part of what those drills are trying to combat. Like there was no way around the fact that kids were aware that there was a possibility of, you know, in the Cold War, some massive outbreak of war and the use of bombs and things like that. And so it really, again, those drills were only kind of about safety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yes, to a certain extent, like, hey, if you can get to the underground basement area, that's where we want to go and things like that. But like the hide under your desk from a bomb being dropped. Hey, you know what? If it's not nuclear, if it's just the impact and there are things falling, maybe it'll provide some protection. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the drills were about making people feel like there was something that could be done and bring some level of control into an uncontrolled situation. And that's the same with, you know, lockdown drills and things like that, man. I have such mixed feelings on and could do an entire podcast talking about that kind of stuff.
Do you have to process with the kids? Like, do they ever come in and like, dude, that shook me and you got to work through it with them, or not really?
A little bit. So fortunately, we haven't had any like majorly shaken kids coming, at least to me, mm-hmm. to talk about it. But we've kind of tried to preempt it with some of the information that we get from other places where it has hit a little bit harder, you know, like research that's been done in communities that are near ones that have actually been affected mm-hmm. by school violence. And so how those drills and things are affecting kids. So we've had the ability to get a little bit out in front on that and minimize some of that impact. But like, the safest, easiest example is like the fire drill.
Yeah.
You know, why do you do a fire drill? Well, because if there is a fire, we want to know how to handle things. Sure, that is a massive part of it. But if you're in an actual fire emergency situation, there are all kinds of things you need to consider that you don't mm-hmm. during a drill. For example, what if the fire is happening somewhere along the route that we normally take? What are my backup options? Yeah. You know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to go through all of those backup options with the kids.
Right.
We're going to train the kids on some basic stuff. Like, hey, I will tell you where we need to go. You're going where I tell you, and you're moving in silence so that if there are directions that need to be conveyed, mm-hmm. everyone can hear them. Everything else about it is at the service of getting those points across.
Yeah.
In the same way with like any of these kinds of drills, it's like, hey, look, we know if we're in an emergency situation, it wouldn't be an emergency if everything was going to go according to our plan.
Right. But you need some basic level of training to
and for the kids to feel like if something real is happening,
yeah.
they at least know a first step to take.
Yeah. I like that.
And so like you can put off the panic. And you can put off the chaos while you're like getting things in place to calmly as possible, get them through it.
You set me up perfectly for the segue into the next definition, putting off the panic. That should be the name of like a punk band, you know, like a two person, three person punk band at most, you know, with like two chords, three chords. But anyway,
So like every punk band.
Yeah, basically. I love punk music, but like, yeah, that's. So they define persecution as the mental and moral energy to eliminate the causes of trauma and dread and attempt to control the forces that affect their lives. So that really just goes hand in hand with everything that we were just talking about with the drill. Like you're basically putting in effort to try to regain control and clear out that sense of dread or fear or, like you said, panic. Things, all of those mm-hmm. negative things, you're trying to get rid of that and exert some sort of control over something that you feel like you've lost control of.
Yeah. And I think the reason why, you know, for a lot of people listening to that and like even me as I read through that definition, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, I don't know, man, persecution has like some really negative tones baked into that word that I don't feel mm-hmm. like that meaning really captures. And I think the reason for that is because this definition doesn't address the fact that like you're directing that persecution at a person.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it
you know what yes. I mean? And so like this definition does a really good job of making it understandable why persecution happens.
Right.
Because this is the goal.
Yeah. But that's
where it becomes a problem is, of course, because in order to use this method, you have to be willing to like strip another person of their personhood so that you can make them
Absolutely.
The thing that you're fixing.
And that's why I think they included the, like, they could have just said mental and physical energy, but they actually include mental and moral energy. So they're actually, like you just said, like there's morality or ethical shifts happening. Like we're willing to slide this bar on the moral scale to come back to normal. So like normally burning you would not be okay, right? But like I'm willing to do some pretty crazy stuff to get my crops to grow again, you know, like so I think there's this, they add that moral line so that they there's that sliding scale that normally wouldn't be considered slidable. Now all of a sudden it has. But one thing I will go ahead and then I want to.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, moral energy here does feel like just another phrasing for like justification. Like, that's what the moral energy is me putting in the work to justify why
what I just
this
did.
Unacceptable thing is acceptable now.
Right, right. Yeah, to like override your guilt and shame.
Right.
Yeah. So that's energy. And, but also, like, one of the things that I think, like, when I was reading this, I was thinking that, you know, there's also a disposition that's here, too, because, again, this is explained in the book, but not in my notes because I'm summarizing. But they're talking about a long period of time, right? So, like, if you walk by and you stub your toe on the couch, you don't then just persecute couches for the rest of your life because it stubbed your toe once, right? You know, out there burning couches. Why is he burning his couch in the street? But
because couches are the source of all stubbed toes, and therefore they must pay.
But it's a long sustained. Like one thing can happen, you'd be like, "Oh yeah, that happens." But then, like another thing, and then it happens over a long period. So if you're a farmer, right, and your livelihood is dependent on your food, and then you go into like a 3-year drought, 4-year, 5-year drought. And there's some of these places, you know, like there's been 20-year droughts. We live in Arizona and we've experienced a 20-year drought, you know, like that starts to put you into it changes from an inconvenience to a desperation, because not only does you and your family need this to live themselves, you also need it to pay for things because your commerce is trade based. Right. And all of these different situations that make you desperate, and that's what kind of like I think pulls the desperation is what kind of unlocks the moral slide, right? Where it was really locked down, now the desperation comes in. You know, all the like, what would you do for a Klondike bar? It's like just ringing in my head over and over again. And I'm like, you know what? If I hadn't eaten in like 5 days, I would do some shady stuff for a freaking Klondike bar, man. But okay. Sorry, I derailed. I even derailed myself.
No.
All right, we're getting back onto it. But yeah, that's the big thing. I think is just that there's an element of time there. So like persecution, you don't invest energy in trying to exert force to control the uncontrollable because something happened one time. You know, like you get cut off on the freeway. Right. Like you might have road rage, but you don't persecute on the freeway going forward. Right. Like it's different. Yeah.
Well, and I think so. It reminds me of there's a quote at least sort of attributed to Napoleon. I don't know whether he ever said it or not. I mean, I haven't met the guy and had a chance to ask him. But like the idea that once is coincidence, twice is circumstance, three times is enemy action. Like, and so, yeah, you're right. Like if there's 1 year where the crops are failing, I mean, that's still potentially devastating.
Yeah, sucks, but we plan but for
that's
it.
A known thing that we happens.
Have storage, you know, yeah.
If it happens a couple of years, all right. Like, I mean, it's not unheard of, but yeah, I think that idea of desperation is really key. And I think that's also why, you know, some examples of persecution happen much more quickly because depending on the circumstances, that will determine when people feel desperate. you know, so like it was not over the course of a few hundred years that the Jewish population of Germany like became targeted for the Nazi party.
Right.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, anti-Semitism had been around for many centuries, and so I'm not trying to diminish right. that. But like what happened to the Jewish community in Germany and to the places that Germany conquered during World War II with the Holocaust, that stuff happening was possible because at the end of World War I, the position that Germany found themselves in brought the German people to a point of desperation.
Yeah, defined by desperation.
A lot more quickly yeah. than it did, like when you're looking at farmers, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's part of it too, is that there is an underlying resilience that varies from community to community and from historical circumstance
yeah.
to historical circumstance. That's going to determine how far you have to be pushed for the desperation to reach that level.
Yeah.
You know, farming is a way of life that requires a great deal of resilience
yeah.
because you spend right. your whole life knowing
right.
you are completely subject to the whims of nature
right.
and what it does. And you're used to the fact that Mother Nature is not a particularly gentle mother most of the time.
Correct.
In fact, if this was not a clean podcast, I would describe Mother Nature as a mother something else, you know, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like that's how it happens. Yeah. Whereas for like, you know, in the German people, they had been like one of, if not the power in Europe, like, and then to suddenly find themselves completely smashed down and left with, like, because of the vindictiveness of, like, the treaties and things after the First World War, there was no real path to recovery left for Germany.
Mm.
It was like, no, we're breaking you down and we intend to leave you broken. And so, like, they got desperate enough that this weird, random, failed art student from Austria is able to come in and start saying some things and give them some excuses and explain yeah. how it's all somebody else's fault. And they were like, hey, he makes some good points.
Yeah.
And like for me as an American, that's kind of what worries me.
Mm-hmm.
Is because, you know, we can get all judgy and sit on our high horse and feel very confident that I would never subject people to, you know, what was going on in Salem. I know better than that. Certainly, I would never, you know, allow myself to justify that level of basically human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, man. We're pretty dang soft.
Yeah, I was just thinking the like, same thing as you're going on and on. I was like, boy, like, we can't go a day without our luxuries. And if we do, we're like, oh, goodness, I'm oppressed.
Oh, my gosh. And now, look, and this is, you know, I'm not trying to make light of this, but if the AC goes out tomorrow, I am toast. I am out.
Yeah.
I am finding literally anywhere else to be.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's 114 degrees.
Yeah.
And that's not a temperature humans are supposed to survive at.
I know that because my AC went out. Yeah, remember our Mario party was hot? Like, we couldn't really get the downstairs to cool down? Yeah. We woke up and the downstairs was, like, 85 degrees. We're like, oh. Oh, okay. That's cool. But it was luckily it was an easy fix. Yeah. They got it fixed. But that's why the house was miserable on Saturday. But anyway.
Well, but no, that's exactly it though. Like if instead of it being an easy fix,
mm-hmm.
if, you know, let's say you and your family had recently moved out to Phoenix from somewhere, you didn't have like family and yeah. friends nearby who you could like go and they would take care of you and the girls for however long it mm-hmm. took until the AC got fixed and all of this. Like if that were happening on an individual level, desperation would lead me to being willing to do some things that I normally wouldn't.
Right.
In terms of, you know, chasing down a side hustle for like some cash now to try and mm-hmm. get something taken care of maybe or something like that. But if it was citywide, like there was a rolling blackout
yeah.
through Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, it wouldn't be that long before like full on looting and stuff was happening.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, no. And like, I mean, we it's not been that far away from seeing looting and things like,
yeah.
Like, I think we, you know, we preach this all the time, but, you know, we see this stuff in history and act like it was so far away, but like it happened yesterday, you know, or you know, mm-hmm. yesteryear, I should say, you know, like it hasn't been that long since we've done, not to the same extreme, but like I feel like there were some times where people were pretty darn close to, you know, like street lynchings and stuff again. Like, there was times where I was legitimately worried about violence, and I was like, well, I have to prepare because there are some desperate people doing wacky things.
Desperate things.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not. And I do remember, like, I remember, like, there was organized, it was around a lot of the Black Lives Matter riots. Like, they were, like, organizing them in different states and stuff. And there was talk about one being even up here. And this isn't a statement on Black Lives Matter. That was the situation in which there was rioting. Mm-hmm. And it was getting close. They were going to do it up here. And there was going to be, like, they were going to turn over car, like, and all this stuff. And I was like, oh man, like, this has gotten crazy. And I sure. felt this desperation in the air. And I was like, that's when bad things happen. Like, I don't ever, like, sadly, I don't talk to my brother a whole lot. It was like one of those times where I was like, dude, like, I heard there was going to be a ride in your, do you need to come stay at my house? Like, do you need me to come, like, circle the wagons? Like, what do you need? Because, like, desperate people are scary.
No, absolutely. And the problem is that, like, desperation begets desperation. Yeah. So, like, if you've got, you know, like, most of the time, it's not the initial protest that's the problem.
Right.
Or the rally or anything like that. It's, okay, there's this protest or this rally going on. And because they're desperate about something, this other group is desperate about them being desperate. And so they're going to have a counter protest yeah. or a counter rally. And then because that group's going to be there, now members of this first group are worried about escalation. And so they've got to be ready. And then yeah. there just kind of becomes this cyclical panic
yeah.
and this like constant
stokes each other into, yeah, absolutely. Into just like a frenzy. It's.
And I think if I was going to try and like start bringing this into kind of a wrap up and like a life lesson, I think for me, the big thing is like being aware of our own desperation. Mm-hmm. You know, we were just talking mm-hmm. about like the very surface level idea of like AC going out.
Yeah,
sure. But like, I need to be aware of what are the things that I could see pushing me to a point of desperation. Mm-hmm. And now, while I'm not desperate, I need to establish mentally what lines I will and will not cross.
Yeah.
Because I cannot trust myself when I'm desperate to make the decision.
Whoa.
I have a much better yes. chance of getting myself to follow a decision I have made in a desperate moment. Like those drills.
Truth.
Like a fire drill.
Well said.
I need to like think about, okay, so in a desperate situation, here is what I can and cannot allow myself to entertain and do. Mm-hmm. Because if I know that, and if I've already had that internal conversation about like, no, this is unacceptable, period.
Yeah.
Then when I find myself in that desperate moment, there's not a guarantee that I won't cross that line, but I've given myself a chance.
Right. Right.
In the same way that if there's an actual fire at school, me going through those drills does not guarantee that I will not panic and go charging into the blaze.
Right.
But I've given myself a much better chance at avoiding that by going through those drills.
Yeah.
Preparation is like our one defense against desperation, mm-hmm. which is an unfair statement to make.
Well, no, it's
because if you could prepare for it, it wouldn't be a desperate situation.
Right.
But we've got to prepare to the extent that we can.
But what you can do is you can develop your resiliency.
Yes.
Right? And that's what you're training, you know? And that's...
Yeah.
David Goggins talks about it all the time. They're like, why do you run the 100-mile runs? He's like, I'm training my mind so that when the worst thing in the world happens, I don't crumble. You know, like, so I can mm-hmm. weather the storm. And I was like, oh, man, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you put yourself through hard things to develop your resiliency so that when you get... When it gets, like you said, farmers have that lifestyle. They've developed a lifetime of resiliency. Have we developed that? Probably not, you know?
I don't feel confident
in it either. For my life lesson, I always kind of take these things and I always internalize everything and I look at me and say, hey, how does this apply to me? And I know not everything does, but one of the things that I've learned a lot is that I self-sabotage. And so like even inside our own brains, we have an idea of normal. And anytime our normal gets shook up, we will sabotage ourselves or like encourage ourselves to get back to normal. So like if you're like, hey, I want a better job, and you start working towards it. But if you haven't like done the deep work and the identity work and all of these things to establish what normal is, you'll start self-sabotaging so that you end up right back where you were, like, because you want normal. And so what we want in our community around us is also what we want inside of us. So like if you want to impact your local, your family community or your expanded community, you kind of got to do it inside first so that you don't self-sabotage. Like that's been one of the big things. So like when I was reading all this stuff, I was like, oh man, like I do that locally inside of me as well as in the community. Like I like exert force for control to get to normal or whatever I believe normal is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that idea of like the almost, so like kind of the internal parallel would almost be that idea of like those invasive thoughts. You know, where like that's kind of the persecution, this thing that comes in and you know that's not actually it, but as you're in the middle of this, it's this thing that won't leave you alone because there's something wrong and I need to bring it back into. And even when it's a positive thing that's happening, like you said, then the self-sabotage kicks in. Because,
you don't deserve this. I'm too stupid. I don't deserve a job like that. You know, and you persecute yourself.
This is for other people.
Until you get back to where you believe you should be. And things are, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. But it's, stuff is interesting to me. It's good. It's good. All right. I have no witty segue for coffee. And it's so disappointing to me right now.
You know why?
Why?
You know why? Because you haven't had enough coffee. You haven't had that brain juice, that caffeine to keep you awake. You're petering out early because you need that good Inkledew coffee to fire you up.
Abso-freaking-lutely. I'm so jacked about it right now. Like, that was an exciting one. Well done, AJ. Like, I want to go drink my own coffee right now. I'm like,
good luck getting to bed afterwards, but.
So if you're as excited as I am, hop on that website, buy some coffee. Support some meaningful conversations. We really would love to roast some coffee and ship it to you. So please do that. Got anything else on your brain there, man?
Nah, man, I'm good.
All right, on. With that, we will say
adieu.